Welcome back to Tech Days Online, day three. I'm here with my buddy Wes again. Hi Wes, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
So, hi, I'm Wes Hackett. I'm the CTO at Adin365 and an office server and services MVP.
Join
Martin, we're going to be taking a look through the SharePoint framework.
We are, yeah. Yeah, we've got a packed agenda this afternoon. So, as Wes says, we're going to look at the SharePoint framework, which I've never heard of, so I'm going to learn a lot in this session. We've then got a session, myself and my buddy Martin Beebe, who's actually on holiday in Spain, but he's still watching the video, which is quite impressive. We pre-recorded that, so that's going to come up after that. And then we've got Gary Whitaker going to come and talk to us about Xamarin for a bit. And then Rob Miles has got an interestingly titled session called Fun Web Development. So we'll see what's involved there. So that's this afternoon. So a bit of office, but then we branch out into other areas as well this afternoon. So Wes, the SharePoint framework. What is the SharePoint framework?
So SharePoint framework, taking a quick recap from this morning. You know, Satya has been quoted as saying Office 365 yep. development as big strategic surface area. SharePoint falls within Office and Office,
sure,
yep. Office development. So with the recent vitalization of the SharePoint experience, the Microsoft teams have looked at, you know, how they develop on the platform. So for years now, SharePoint development's all been, you know, C#. Then yep. we've recently been sort of using the add-in model that we talked about earlier today.
Sure.
Getting used to using JavaScript.
Yep.
Yeah. To a SharePoint developer, JavaScript's a little bit of an alien
yeah,
concept.
Yeah, I think to most anybody that's kind of done a lot of historical .NET developers, really. I mean, I actually hate JavaScript like, quite passionately. Like, I'd much rather be, but it's a necessary evil is the way that I see JavaScript
yeah.
these days. It's kind of, you have to do a bit of JavaScript whether you like it or not. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Cool, okay.
So taking that sort of walk through time, you yeah. know, we cast our mind back to the sort of pre-2003 era. We were, you know,
the
as
good
you
old days.
Yeah, the good old yeah. days. When you first got into yeah. SharePoint, yeah. We were talking about ASP and ASP.NET transition. As
sure.
developers, we were thinking, oh, how do I take my ASP.NET traditional skills, move them into the .NET framework?
Yeah.
And everything was about server-side rendering.
Sure, yeah.
Take it on a few years, and between sort of 2007, 2010, Microsoft also stood up BPOS. So we remember right. the days of yeah. the first sort of cloud
was
Microsoft.
What did BPOS? Business Productivity Online Suite.
Yeah.
I can't believe
yeah.
I remember that from 2006. Yeah. That's amazing.
So that was kind of the first time that Microsoft themselves ran a service with
yeah.
SharePoint. And it was still fairly server-focused. You know, you would be building WSPs and on
yep.
Full trust code, if you like,
sure, yeah.
to stick into the server. But with the introduction of BPOS, this kind of partial trusted code, what
yep.
was known and still is known as the sandbox.
Yep, I remember and well, yeah.
Yeah, so you could kind of get this proxied on-box code service, which
yep.
was allowing you to write C# code and interact with SharePoint on BPOS
yep.
to extend it. You could also use those in SharePoint on-prem. You could run sandbox solutions.
Sure, yeah.
So along comes sort of 2012, 2013, when SharePoint 2013 is released. And away goes BPOS, and it's the first time the Office 365 brand is kind of front and center.
Sure, yeah.
And cloud services, it becomes publicly Microsoft's direction of travel for SharePoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we've got an on-prem world and we've got a cloud world, and there needs to be a model that kind of spans both.
It's quite mad to think, actually, that BPOS is 10 years ago now, which
yeah.
doesn't seem like it,
yeah.
but we've been on this journey for 10 years, if not more than that, transitioning from
yeah.
an on-premise to a cloud-based way of doing SharePoint. So.
And alongside that, it's really interesting to know that the UK is almost at the forefront of Office 365 and cloud adoption in many areas
yeah.
and many sectors.
True,
you know,
yeah.
And with the opening of the UK data centres, that hopefully is going to unlock some of the industries like public sector.
Yeah, a lot of the government industries, that kind of thing, healthcare, which were data sovereignty has always been an issue, and now we've got our UK-based data centres. That's going to unlock some doors, I think, hopefully, for that. So,
yeah.
Great.
So we start at 2013. We start thinking about a client-side rendering era. We're now in a position where, yes, we've still got sandbox. Yes, if you're on premises, you can still do full trust code.
Yeah.
But we can now run JavaScript effectively, client-side app technology in page to build user interfaces, to interact with data via REST, via the JSON. And as SharePoint developers, we kind of have to get on the web dev bandwagon.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here we find ourselves in 2016 at kind of a pivotal moment in being a SharePoint dev,
yeah.
because you are looking at a point where 2016 is allowing us to accelerate web development for SharePoint on premises and SharePoint online. we're now using those open source and client-side technologies to provision and deploy custom presentations. So pages and web parts and list interfaces and all these kind of things that will come over time for SharePoint. Allow us a brand new user experience extension so we can host those sort of script files, if you like, CDN and the wiring to make that a lot simpler for developers being put in place.
Sure.
As we mentioned throughout the entire morning, REST has become the way to interact with the platform.
Absolutely, yeah.
And for a web dev, that's great because they're kind of used to using the web services.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main things about REST is that it's platform agnostic, really. You can call REST using pretty much any program. If you can make a HTTP call, you can make a REST call. So that's all it is, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the SharePoint framework has got a number of pieces inside it to kind of make that interaction a lot simpler. We touched on them kind of during the add-in session, but again, being able to hook onto web hooks and use the kind of web dev side of the hook technology to react to things inside the platform, that's all in preview now as well. And then finally, because all of that is sort of off box, if you like, you're running your application from a source that isn't the SharePoint server, we're now looking at 365 being a software service that the SharePoint framework is sitting alongside and inside.
Okay.
And you're looking at how you to kind of remotely have services that connect in.
Okay.
And it's kind of all change because we've really been taken out of our comfort zone as SharePoint developers.
Yeah.
It's exciting, but it's also challenging. It's knowing where to start, knowing what to focus on. And it's kind of interesting that Microsoft have published some principles around the SharePoint framework, and we've got three principles. The first one is really, I think, quite nice to know. It's the fact that the team that build Office 365 and SharePoint use the same tooling, the same framework, and the same approaches that you will.
Yeah.
So it's as first party and third party brought together.
And that's definitely not always been the case.
I mean, if you talk to anyone that's done a SharePoint 2007 implementation, there would be always a roadblock where you just wanted to go that little bit further than the API. And you kind of had to do reflection or some kind of bit of a hack, really, to get behind the Microsoft smokescreen of sort of stop you getting into that code to be able to do some of the more advanced things. Well, now with the SharePoint framework, because the team that build the product are also using the same framework, as a community, we're going to be able to contribute.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to say to the product teams, well, actually, this is your interface. This is how we plugged in. These are the things the framework did well. These are the things the framework could do with improving it, and this is where we'd like it to be extended. Because SharePoint's always been a developer platform underneath.
Absolutely.
You could use it out of the box, you could get a good value from a business point of view out of the box, but the framework always gave us the opportunity to go and do some really wonderful and amazing things.
Yeah. And some terrible things as well.
Yeah, and some terrible things. Yeah, Microsoft have got the Patterns and Practices group and initiative there to kind of help guide you into some good practices. So good examples, they said don't change the master page, don't take Seattle away and do your own master page, that's bad news, you don't get our updates.
Yeah.
2014 they announced the sandbox code deprecation, so that was the kind of partial trust model was going to go away, and it's actually going away right now.
Yeah.
In the last sort of 30 days there was an announcement it's going to be turned off.
Right, okay.
And to use that cloud service as a developer, you need to understand and make intelligent and informed decisions.
Yeah.
So the fact that the framework is now first and third party will help with that, because
definitely
the teams that build 365 and SharePoint are going to be in line with where you are as an outside developer putting on things on that platform. It also allows us to think about cloud and on-premises.
Yeah.
So don't think there's any public timelines, but I guess there'll be some announcements at Ignite around 2016 on-premises and how the framework fits into that stuff in terms of timeline.
Yeah.
But Microsoft have already talked about feature packs and SharePoint 2016 feature packs and how it's delivered to the cloud first and then rolled back into the on-premises world. So one would expect that kind of approach is taken for basically the way the product is built,
yeah,
because they will want the new modern experiences for the on-prem world.
Sure. Yeah, the on-prem is definitely not going away. It's just becoming much more of a complementary picture rather than just relying squarely on the Office 365.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of valid use cases in having a SharePoint on-premises deployment.
Yeah.
365 hybrids and the hybridization approach that kind of gets stronger with 2016 and will continue to get stronger.
Yeah.
It's going to make these things a lot easier as a developer. You're going to be okay, I can build it once, deploy it once. Deploy it into both types of environments.
Sure.
So kind of final principle there is they want to unlock the Microsoft Graph. So we spoke about the Microsoft Graph and how it spans those Office 365 services. And now the SharePoint framework is going to start introducing, you know, the sign-on, single sign-on.
Yeah,
that's the number one bugbear, right?
Yeah, I mean, it seems simple. It seems like it's always been the number one problem, but
I mean, there's challenges with using Graph today in a client-side only implementation. It doesn't play very nice with Internet Explorer zones.
Right.
So ADAL.js, you'll get some challenges if configuration of that IE is a trusted zone.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft Online login versus the kind of the app you're running. If they're not kind of aligned and the stars are lined up, then you won't get the token back, and your employee gets a bad experience.
Yeah, sure.
So this is kind of where you kind of look at this and go, okay, this is all old hat.
This makes me happy. Although I said earlier that I kind of hate JavaScript, it is kind of a familiar world. You know, so my background since I stopped doing SharePoint about 5 years ago. Has been in web development and in JavaScript and ASP.NET and those kind of web technologies. And I can see that that's now coming into SharePoint in quite a big way.
Yeah. I think the kind of the fact that SharePoint developers are now being able to use web dev, right, just opens up so much more possibilities for us, because we're not limited to a particular type of approach. We're not limited to even using a particular type of machine. I mean, I know many of the guys that built the framework are not using a Windows-based device.
Yeah.
And they're running Visual Studio Code or another set of dev
Sublime,
tools.
Sublime, et cetera.
So the SharePoint framework is really TypeScript is your programming language, if you like. And TypeScript, I found the transition from C# server-side code to TypeScript really quite simple.
Yeah.
Like, it, for me, it was, okay, well, this is, you know, typing and I can do classes and inheritance. Yeah. And
I mean, a lot of the ideas in TypeScript have come from C#. It's pretty obvious, really. Yeah.
So it wasn't as scary as if somebody said, well, what I'd like you to do is write some raw JavaScript.
So just for people that aren't aware, so TypeScript is basically this abstraction layer where you write what looks like JavaScript, but it has typing, it has these extra features that currently JavaScript doesn't have. A lot of it's coming into JavaScript.
Yeah.
And it compiles down to raw JavaScript. So you are... The end result is JavaScript, but you've got this slightly nicer developer experience, which is what TypeScript's all about, basically.
Yeah, and you can still write raw JavaScript.
Yep,
so if you're a JavaScript expert and you're confident you know the output that you want, by all means, stick it straight into a TypeScript file. The transposing will just take it and push it out as is. So Microsoft's framework is based on this TypeScript. It sits on the Node.js stack. So Node.js, think of it, you know, if you're current SharePoint developer, think of it iOS.
Yeah.
It's your way of bringing in the serving, so like the Gulp serve and stuff like that, but it's also modules. So capabilities that you bring into, you know, you might bring in the Angular module or the React.js module, and you sort of build up your servers.
Yeah, it's basically server-side JavaScript is what it is effectively, isn't it? And the modules are the plugins that, there's thousands of them that are available to sort of add on to Node and run alongside Node.
So those two big pieces are brand new to SharePoint developer ecosystem. They're not something that we did day to day.
Yeah, but it's also worth pointing out that they are, the reason why they're there is because they are commonplace in the web world.
Yes.
So if you're a web dev of any sort, even an ASP.NET web dev now, because the new version of ASP.NET Core uses all this stuff as well. It uses TypeScript, it uses NPM, it uses Gulp, etc.
Yeah.
If you're in that world, this just seems very natural and very familiar.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, why it's there, to try and attract a broader pool of developers, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes it easier as a business to look at, okay, well, I'm going out for web dev skills.
Yeah.
And I might have them working on the public website on a, you know, a CMS platform on 1 week, and the next week I might have them working in SharePoint.
Yeah, SharePoint just becomes an API, really, just another API that they need to work with,
So that's kind of the big new things.
Yeah.
And then we've got this kind of flow. So let me talk through the flow of how you go about it, and then we're going to jump into a command line and kick one off live.
Excellent.
So. Fingers crossed at that point. Yeah, a bit of live coding.
Not to look forward to.
Not too much, though. So Microsoft SharePoint Framework is delivered as a Yeoman generator.
You're going to say what Yeoman is?
So Yeoman generators are equivalent to Visual Studio new project.
Yeah.
They allow you to kind of create a framework of files and a structure in a folder system that kind of is predefined with a collection of things in it.
So it's like a scaffolding.
Templates, that kind of thing. So you run the SharePoint Yeoman generator. At the moment, the framework's in developer preview, and there will probably be other shapes. There's some of them were talked about earlier in the year, but at the moment you're looking at only web parts. So in the framework, you're able to build a web part, but you can't build a full page, you can't build a list, you can't build some of the other more advanced shapes, but the generator will do web parts at the moment. So once the generator runs, you get the ability to open it in Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code.
Yeah.
So.
Or any other text editor, presumably.
Yeah, or any. Yeah, Sublime, you do it in Notepad if you want.
I mean, that's my favorite editor, Notepad. That's like hardcore development. If you can do it in Notepad, you're a proper developer. That's what I say. None of this IntelliSense nonsense.
You know what? I went to the Dev Kitchen in Redmond in February to see this stuff for the first time and actually get hands on. And until that point, I thought Visual Studio Code was for a Mac only, because there'd been such a dev push about, you know, develop on Mac, use Visual Studio Code. I thought, well, okay, that's the Visual Studio for Mac.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, learn that it works on both.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's cross-platform. I mean, I guess there's a question about the scenarios where you'd use VS Code on Windows are probably less, because you could obviously use Visual Studio.
Yeah.
But there are definitely scenarios. If I want to edit a JSON file quickly, or just look at a Gulp script or something like that really quickly, I'll use VS Code because it's much more lightweight.
Yeah, it's lightweight.
It markdown files, that kind of thing.
Opens in seconds. It doesn't have such a large install footprint as Visual Studio. But Visual Studio is still really good when you think about enterprise projects.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you build the code in the web part. And then there's this new capability as part of the framework called SharePoint Workbench.
Right.
And one of the things the SharePoint Workbench is there for is to give you kind of a fake SharePoint, if you like.
Okay.
It's exactly as it says. It's a workbench where your web part can run.
Right.
You can exercise your user experience, the edit experience. You can create mock data, so you can wire up your REST calls that says, okay, if I'm running in Workbench, because it will know, then use these mocks and then get data back. So if you're sitting on a train or a plane, you can still be productive. You can use the Workbench to kind of get going.
So I don't need to install SharePoint on my laptop anymore?
No. Oh. I mean, I'm running, absolutely.
It's quite a big thing, really.
Both of us have got surfaces in front of us. I do all my day-to-day dev on this surface, and I don't have SharePoint running on here, and I don't even need to connect to 365. I can use that Workbench in situ through my
browser. That's really cool.
So quite cool. So you have this like new and fast iteration where you sort of build some code, test it in the Workbench. Does it work? Yeah, great. And you keep doing that until the point that says, okay, now I need to get it into SharePoint.
Right.
Now, there's two nice parts here. You can copy the Workbench file into a document library in SharePoint. Open the Workbench and now you're in SharePoint. So you're in the Workbench in SharePoint, and we're going to see that a bit later. And that gives you access to all the rest in SharePoint.
Right.
So now you're getting live data.
Oh, I see. So you're still coding against the Workbench, but it's actually it's proxying effectively through to the REST APIs.
So you can do that. And then you can, currently with the preview, you can push the package into SharePoint and run in what's known as classic page, which you and I would known as SharePoint pages.
Yeah.
And Microsoft are in the process of rolling out their modern pages, and that's the one with the new canvas and the little plus button that they announced with the team site and group merger last week.
Okay.
And that's where the SharePoint framework is really going to start showing up first.
Sure.
So you can test that against your client-side pages. When you're ready to ship, there's some gulp tasks and wiring that's already there to push those assets into by default Azure CDN, but right. you can make a choice of what type of CDN you want to use. You're just going to have to wire that sort of plumbing yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're ready to ship it. So that modern tool chain is just light years ahead of what we're used to with Visual Studio.
You know,
no waiting for 6 or 7 minutes as IIS restarts on your box for a SharePoint 2010, and no deploying to the cloud just to get the UI built.
Yeah.
For
no, it's a massive, I mean, the hours that I must have spent running VMs and running out of memory on my machine because I've got the whole of SharePoint running on this VM that's taken up 80% of the available memory on my machine. It's kind of hard work, really, trying to deal with all that.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't make you productive as a development team.
Right.
You're constantly kind of waiting for the whirly wheel to finish to do something that might crash the first time you run it.
Yeah.
So we're going to switch into a demo.
Okay.
And you know, hopefully I've sacrificed enough to the demo gods that we're going to do the world's simplest demo. We're going to look at Hello World.
Hello World. It's always a good place to start with a new technology.
Yeah. So I'm just going to bring up where we start. So we start with a Yeoman generator, which means we're back in command line.
Yeah.
So we've got this command line ready, and to kick off, we find a folder location. So I've just created tech days today.
Yep.
And then we call yo Microsoft/SharePoint.
So yo is the thing that invokes the Yeoman generator. So there's an office one as well. You can say yo office, or there's an ASP.NET one. You can say yo ASP.NET.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool syntax.
Yeah.
You tell that we're in JavaScript world now because things have become cooler. That's what happens with JavaScript.
Yeah, and you know, you can get Yeoman stickers for the back of your device, and everyone feels cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's for the hipsters and the funky people.
Yeah, I don't feel ashamed being a SharePoint developer in a coffee shop now. I can sit there
and I can do my Yeoman.
Yeah. So we've got in front of us the first sort of question that Yeoman's asking is, what do we want to call the solution? And it kind of preemptively gives us a default. This is going to be called Tech Days. I'm going to call it Hello World.
Okay.
And where do you want to place the files? Well, I'm going to stick with the current folder. What's your web part name? If I can type.
So this is a bit more than file new project, really, because it's asking you specific details about the end solution. So it's much more like the kind of scaffolding that you might have had in MVC, you know, add new controller and then you fill out the bits and pieces.
And one important question it asks is, what type of JavaScript framework do you want to use?
Right.
And you'll see today the choice is React or Knockout.
Okay.
And it's interesting to point out that the SharePoint framework and the developers that build within Microsoft on the SharePoint framework use React.
Right.
So you can still make your choices, but the MS team are fairly comfortable using React, and Delve is built in React, the modern team site interface is built in React, document libraries are built in React.
Yeah.
And you have a choice as a dev team now, whether you want to adopt React.js as your programming style, or whether you want to stick with Angular.js.
I was going to say, Angular seems to be ominous by its absence there. It's kind of, it's an interesting thing. I thought that would have at least been an option on the list there, given the popularity of it. But
yeah, it is an interesting commentary because, you know, React's very good for, you know, highly changing pages. It comes out of the Facebook sort of pile, and it's there, and it reacts to, pardon the pun, reacts really well to an interface that needs to change. So in a web part context, that could be right.
Yeah.
Angular's much more opinionated. It kind of makes you want to go down services, controllers, and it has a structure.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be right for web part. It might be overkill for web part.
Maybe, yeah. And we always have my buddy Martin Beebe have this game, pick a noun.js, and you can take any noun, and you'll find if you go onto NPM, there's almost definitely a framework called that noun.js. It will do something with it. And this is the thing about JavaScript. It's kind of things move on so quickly. React is the flavor of the month at the moment. 6 months' time, it could be something completely different. Could be Angular 2, could be some other framework that comes along. So
And I think, we're gonna hopefully see an Angular version of this very shortly that's kind of pre-built. Just to prove that Angular isn't the forgotten child, if you like, that we can go through that. So we're gonna kick off with just picking no framework.
Okay.
That's gonna do its thing for a few minutes.
Okay.
So what it's doing is it's kind of taking all those modules, it's setting up your Node.js, it's running its scaffold, and you can see that, you know, it's fetching all these bits and bobs. and that's going to kind of create a folder structure
with
some node modules underneath. And that kind of setup is really simple.
And
you know, it's all command line, it's all going to run, and it's repeated every time you start the project, so you kind of get copies. So there was some debate, because obviously we're in dev preview, it's like the product team are really great at being engaged with and saying, okay, well, these are the things we like, these are the things that we'd like to change. One of the biggest changes in Drop 2 was the footprint size. So originally lots of files were coming down into the folder per web part, and you know, it was quite, you know, people were sort of not used to seeing all these node modules. And you know, that's basically your web server, so it is going to be quite big. So now with Drop 2, which was out a couple of weeks ago, you've got a much smaller footprint, which you can kind of deal with. And
which is, of course, because it's JavaScript, so that's really important, because those raw files that need to be downloaded and accessed as part of rendering the web part. So performance, the amount of requests that the browser effectively has to make is quite a key thing with this stuff. So
it is, and it is called, you know, kind of new to a lot of the dev side. Perks of watching it spin out in front of us. So while that's going on, let's just quickly talk about where you can get information about this stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Because, you know, that's how do you get started? I'm borrowing the hello world, if you like.
Yeah.
So on GitHub, /SharePoint is the entry point to all of the new SharePoint framework.
Okay.
We can see it in front here.
So that's an important point there. So this is all open source.
Yeah,
so
this is all open source.
This is out there on GitHub. People can look at the code. They can contribute to it as well, presumably.
Yep.
It's proper open source.
Great. Yeah. So I'm just in the wiki part at the moment, but Microsoft have helped us kind of get started, because we've got set up a developer tenant. So the preview at the moment is available only in an MSDN Office 365 tenancy.
Okay.
So it won't show up in your kind of prod tenant.
Yeah.
It won't show up in kind of a demo, Microsoft partner demo tenant. It's only there in the you know, the developer tenants. which you can now get 25 licenses on. So if you've already got an MSDN tenant and you've only got one user license, go into the licensing. You can now up it to 25 for free.
Okay.
Which is great, because that was always the restriction on the MSDN tenant, you know, one user.
Yeah.
And then we've got steps here about setting up your tenant, so what do you need to provision, setting up your local machine, so that's going to help you get Node installed and come along with the Yeoman generator. And then there's a whole collection of tutorials that we can walk through, so everything from kind of what we're going to see in a minute or so, where it's provisioned a basic empty shell.
Yeah.
Right way through to looking at using jQuery accordions, because everyone's, you know, everyone's kind of familiar with jQuery.
Yeah.
Office UI Fabric. So do you know much about Office UI Fabric?
A little bit, but it's basically a CSS framework, isn't it, for making something look like Office.
Yeah. So when it was launched, it was a pure play sort of CSS experience where there was some jQuery plugins kind of to help things like drop-down boxes appear to be drop-down boxes. But the Fabric team are doing a really great job of taking it beyond that. So they've got they've got a React framework that's kind of in preview as well. So that gives you all of the Office Fabric sort of controls that are React ready. They kind of can be bolting into that React framework. There's also a community project, so people like Waldorf Mastercars and Andrew Connell and a whole collection of other people have created one for Angular. So that's NG Office Fabric, or Office UI Fabric.
Yeah.
That's the one I use, because I tend to build in Angular.
Yeah.
I've been building in Angular for three or four years now. Yeah. So you can use your framework of choice. You can bring in the things that you need, and kind of this code environment is where you get all the information.
Okay.
It's also important to know, you know, the issues is where you can talk to the team that build it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you find something isn't quite, you know, you're a really experienced web dev and you think, well, actually, the way the Gulp packaging works needs some extensibility.
Yeah.
Help team, help the whole community by coming in and raising that issue and being, you know, helpful and descriptive with what's wrong.
Yeah.
And the team are really listening to that stuff.
Yeah, and you're talking about, and I've seen this with ASP.NET Core as well, as that's gone through its development cycles. It's great, because you are talking directly to the guys that write the code.
Yeah.
Like, there's no layers in between. Sure, you're going to get PMs and stuff on there as well, but you can see the guys that actually check in the code for this stuff, and you can actually contact them and reach out to them, and they will take ownership of issues and things like that.
Absolutely, a good way to do it. There's a couple there. So Shax is one of the team in the Microsoft side, and Pat Miller, and they've been really engaged with this experience to get more feedback and feed it on to the right person in their team to kind of help kind of answer those questions. He finished.
Excellent.
Brilliant. So while we were talking, that was whizzing away, and we've got our first binary SharePoint logo, which means we ran.
Okay, is that what we're looking for then?
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
The big
SharePoint logo made out of hashes.
Okay.
And at this point, we want to do code space dot, because we want to open it in Visual Studio Code, and
that's a command that's you can use with any command line. It's not necessarily a Yeoman thing. If you do that.
Yeah,
it just means open in Visual Studio Code.
Yeah, pretty much.
Open this folder in Visual Studio Code. Yeah.
So what we've sort of greeted with is a folder structure that is actually inside a Visual Studio project.
Okay.
And kind of just talk. I mean, we're not going to have time to go through every single aspect. Yeah. But let's talk.
Well, you mean we're not going to look at every single line of code?
Probably not.
No,
probably
okay,
not.
Fine. That's a shame.
So we have a config, and. You know, these parts here allow you to sort of define some entry points, exit points. That's like what it'll do when it runs.
Yeah. So this looks like just a regular JSON file.
Nothing kind of unusual. The externals is where you're sort of pointing to the node modules that are being pulled in as external references, and you can add other things in there. So Angular can go in there if you want to. Obviously localization, so we got some references for localization.
Yep.
Got another one called deploy to Azure storage. So I mentioned that the CDN approach, obviously part of that can be that you deploy to the Azure storage, which then gets CDN replicated.
Yep.
So you can put in your keys and storage account names in there, and the gulp process will pick it up and CDN.
One thing that people don't often appreciate about Azure storage specifically is that it's very, very, very fast to serve files, much faster than even in the Azure App Service. So if you've got a website with, say, an image in being served from the App Service, then you move that same image to a storage account, the performance is massively faster in terms of the way it gets served.
Yeah.
So there's lots of benefits to thinking about using storage. I'm sure that's the same for the other storage providers as well, but performance is a really key thing with storage.
Yeah. Obviously, we're in TypeScript, so there are a collection of linting rules. So linting being kind of you can part-on check if you like, that says, okay, I don't want Pascal casing, I only want camel casing, that kind of stuff. You can go and change those. It comes with a set of defaults.
Okay.
So that's the kind of config module. And then the node modules, there's hundreds of node modules in there, and that's the kind of server side.
Sure. Right?
So you could spend days going through that stuff.
Yeah.
One word of warning. Going in there to find out how something works is great. Going in there and changing something, the next time someone runs npm install, all those changes are lost. So it's not advisable to do it. That's some of the challenges I've seen already with the framework, people making those changes. We've got a gulp file, and this will initialize, you know, when you say gulp build, it will go off, or gulp serve, it will go off and do the gulp stuff.
So gulp is basically a JavaScript task runner. It's the thing that Gulp and Grunt and Broccoli are the kind of three main ones, but it's the thing that's responsible for building the packages, building the application ready to deploy and go live.
Yep. And then we're in TypeScript, so we've got typing, so you can pull different typings in if you want to bring the Angular typing in, or application insights, all that sort of stuff, it's all good. And then finally we've got the source, the actual meat and potatoes
actual
of
code,
this, of the code. And kind of, we've got a hello world here, and we've got a SAS file to do the styles, and they're transposed and available in the rendering. We've got the manifest file, which allows us to kind of define our name and our properties.
Yep.
Interesting here, we've got this idea of pre-configured entries, and pre-configured entries are like how many times you had a default web part where it might be, okay, I've got the weather for Boston, the weather for Washington, the weather for Seattle.
Sure,
You'd create them as pre-configured entries.
Okay, I see,
so you set those up. The file itself is, the web part here, is kind of importing from the Microsoft base class.
Right.
And it's gonna kind of import its properties, import the base class, and then you've got, in the simplest form, you've got this one that says, okay, I'm gonna render.
Okay.
And I'm going to just show you, you know, basic div of content with a property pane. Now, if we want to see that, we just do gulp serve in the same command window.
Okay.
And if all is well, it will build it and spin out into Visual
Studio. So this is a task you've got in the gulp file to actually
is,
serve and
this
run
is,
the
yeah,
project.
This is the out-the-box kind of framework experience. It comes with gulp serve that will spin out. And what it'll see is it's now transpiling all the TypeScript, it's packaging it, it's getting it ready, and we're launching into the localized workbench.
Okay.
So this was the workbench I was talking about.
Right.
This is our developer experience. So you can see there I'm running on Mission Control, which is this device. And
that's the name of your device, is it?
Yeah, well, the company has a space theme, right? So all our products have like Apollo 11 or Saturn V as a code word. So Mission Control.
Nice. Seems like a good one, that does. Yeah, very good.
Yeah. So we get this new canvas experience. So if I pop in there, we can see Hello World.
Yep.
And that Hello World is now kind of the web part that we were using.
Yeah, sure.
Now, what's really nice, and something that SharePoint devs are not really going to get very often from kind of ways that things are built today. Let's just make a small change. Right, so I've made.
So you're changing the actual code, the JavaScript code there.
Yeah.
In Visual Studio Code.
Yeah. I'm going to save it.
Yep.
And then if we look quickly back at the thing, it's rebuilding.
Okay.
And if I go back here, it's going to reinitialize my workbench.
So for a SharePoint dev, that's huge, right? So having to just make a change, click save, and it just refreshes in the browser. I mean, so you're using Gulp's using a watch task there, presumably,
to watch
the fact that this has changed and it's reserving the page.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, the benefit of bringing all these open web tools into the framework, because you get benefits like that, stuff like that. People have been doing this in JavaScript web development for years and years, and finally starting to use it in SharePoint as well.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really scary because you go, oh, TypeScript, new Gulp, I don't know, I've never done, you know, I've been F5-ing for 10 years. And suddenly you go, oh, okay, now I get this. This is really going to help me do day-to-day.
Well, one of the other good things as well is that this kind of curve is very similar to the curve you'll go through in ASP.NET as well. So anybody that's done ASP.NET but not yet looked at Core 1, the new version, exactly the same story. So we're now using all these same tools in ASP.NET as well. So the good thing is if you are from that kind of slightly more traditional .NET world, you've only got to learn this one set of stuff once, you know, and it's you're gonna be in a good position for .NET and for SharePoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the Hello World and the property pane we can come up and you know, make changes to the properties. And I put a space between the two, you'll see that it changed.
Yeah, straight away,
So this is what's known as reactive properties. You can turn that off so that it has an apply button, but by default, your kind of properties will make changes into your web part.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of Hello World.
Okay.
So I'm just gonna stop that particular web server.
Okay.
And what I've now got is a different solution. And
is this one you prepared earlier?
This is one I prepared earlier. So the Dev Kitchen has had a hackathon.
Right.
And they ran a kind of very early one in February. They did one later in March, and then I think they did a partners one fairly recently in sort of July, August timeframe. Yep. So it's been interesting to watch the evolution of the SharePoint framework itself, because back in February there were a lot of things that have now been fixed.
Yeah.
As some of the shapes have changed, you know, so we're looking at web parts today, but back in Feb there were some other things that you could do with the framework that were talked about.
Sure.
So as part of that and involved in that kind of process, we've been creating products and hackathon entries for kind of the demos, etc.
Sure.
If you like. So this is a blog aggregator, because every corporate comms team wants, you know, blogs across the organization to be aggregated. So the purpose of this is just purely to look at the Delve blogs and just surface them in chronological order. So it's a super simple example, but it's using Angular. So I wanted to show you how something you're really familiar with today, the Angular framework, if you're using client side, can still be brought to bear for this. So we're not going to go through every kind of aspect, but let me just sort of talk you through some key parts here. In common, we've got services that talk to SharePoint Online. So we've abstracted them away to kind of TypeScript files that are the Angular services to talk to the blog. So the blog service there is the bit that goes off the SharePoint, calls the REST, and does the pieces. The app is the Angular app itself, so you've got a module and a controller and all the kind of things that you're used to seeing, view models, service. And then finally, we kind of hook it in to the web part itself. So, let me just close the build things down. So in the render, you know, we've brought in at the top here, you can see we've brought in the module loader to bring in the Office Fabric CSS. We've got import star as Angular from Angular. That's the way that TypeScript is kind of bringing them in. And behind the scenes, the framework's using Webpack to kind of put it all together and modulize it so that it pulls in the pieces that you want.
Sure.
And we've got here the kind of render. We're bringing in a template. We're registering an NG controller. And then there's an important part here, which is bootstrapping. So in Angular, you bootstrap the application in to a particular div if you want to have more than one on a page.
Yeah, okay.
So that's going to bootstrap our blog spotlight in. And then there's a whole bunch of other sort of plumbing here, which is just about setting properties.
Okay.
So if I gulp serve that,
so this is basically the same app, but running in Angular now.
Yeah, so we're going to run in Angular. So that's going to build.
Okay.
So again, this is, you know, demonstrating that your flavor of front-end development can be applied into the same framework.
Whichever one's the cool one at this point in time.
Yeah, whichever one, or to be honest, whichever one is the one that your enterprise has invested in.
Yeah.
You know, if you've already got a strong jQuery or handlebars or whatever else, you can carry on using that technique and using that stuff and adopt the React framework over time if you want to. So I mentioned earlier that we have a workbench to run in inside the SharePoint site. So I've got my developer tenant here. I've uploaded the workbench to the document library. I can simply click the workbench. It's going to launch into the page. And this is my Angular blog roll up.
So this is is proxying through to the actual live APIs and getting live data.
That's live data. That will go off, if I open that in another tab, that will go off to the Delve blog.
Yeah.
There we go. So right, the division. Okay. So that's going off to the rest of Office 365. And we've got things like, we can, if we want to take that down to 2. I can make that. Take that back down to 1, and it will show.
Yeah.
So there you can see you've brought in the framework you used to.
Yeah.
Workbench is still there. I haven't yet needed to deploy to SharePoint to kind of test that it's going to interact correctly. Yeah. And that's the kind of power of the framework. It's all the client-side technologies that you're used to bringing to bear to build a solution.
Yeah.
Just kind of in a new container.
Sure.
Instead of classic pages, we're now in this framework.
Yeah. Very good. Awesome stuff. So it's quite a lot there. So if you are a SharePoint dev, there's a lot to learn there, but it seems like it's pretty good. It seems like it's heading in the right direction and kind of finally sort of de-standardizing some of the stuff that has been quite SharePoint specific in the past, making it a bit more generic and a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend that SharePoint developers today, that are looking at this stuff today, that they look at TypeScript, they look at React, they look at Angular. You know, if they're not familiar with either of those two frameworks, probably go down the React route for now, because Microsoft
is the one that most of the products will be using.
Yeah. Most of the products are going to be using it, so by all means, learn that one.
Yeah.
The Delve team have got some good blogs about how to do Delve implementations using React.
Yeah.
Obviously, the team themselves are using, and we're in developer preview.
Right.
So, the words of invite to go and talk to the team via the GitHub repo and actually on Twitter or in what was the Yammer network, which is now the new big Microsoft Technologies.
Right.
I can't remember the name of it. The Modern Technologies kind of forums.
Okay.
Get in there and on Stack Overflow and communicate with the team about what you need from the framework.
They're there and they're listening, aren't they?
Yeah, they're listening. They're reacting. Drop 2 was fixing stuff that people in the community had already commented on.
Yeah.
And that's happened over a couple of weeks.
Okay.
So it's going to keep in preview for a while yet. There'll probably be some good information at Ignite.
Yeah.
And really, what we're getting in position to is helping the team get that framework right. and then being in a position as an enterprise to adopt it towards the later half of this year.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Wes, once again. That's three sessions in one day. It's very good. So we're going to take another break now. After the break, we've got a pre-recorded session with myself and my chum, Martin Beebe. We're going to be talking about machine learning and cognitive services. So have a look at that. But we'll see you in 15 minutes.